proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. We are going to, in the course of our program today, get into this whole issue of what's going on with the fires in Southern California. We now know, apparently, who is responsible for them, as reported on Fox News, or Fox News, I guess it is, just a few moments ago.
And Allison Camerota, an FBI memo from late in June of this year is popping up this morning, and it's ominous.
This actually has happened for many years in the past as well. An FBI memo sent out to local law enforcement said that an Al-Qaeda detainee had given them some information that the next wave of terrorism could be in the form of setting wildfires.
So, it's Al-Qaeda! It's responsible for it. So anyhow, we'll be getting into that in the second hour, and also, what's the state of the National Guard in California. In our third hour, our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, Joseph Minton Ammon is going to be with us. His new book, The Brotherhood of the Disappearing Pants, A Field Guide to Conservative Sex Scandals. And right now, Robert Peters is on the line with us. He is the president of Morality and Media, moralityandmedia.org. And this is the 20th annual Rap Week to kick off a year-long effort to raise public awareness about the pornography or obscenity problem. Robert Peters, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. I'm a little baffled here. We have, over the last 25 years, seen probably a 200 or 300% increase in the availability of pornography in the United States. You probably have more accurate numbers on that than I do. And at the same time, we've seen an 85% drop in the incidence of rape. And I'm looking at three different studies, including a National Crime Victimization Survey, that say that there's a correlation between the two, that pornography, availability of pornography is actually decreasing rape. Why are you objecting to it?
Well, I mean, first part of the answer is that we've never said, I don't think anybody that fights pornography would say that the only problem is the, in my opinion, clear link between pornography and certain type of sex crimes. And we've always maintained that the primary harm of pornography, apart to kids, when, of course, as pornography becomes more pervasive in our society, more and more kids are accessing it at younger and younger ages. But historically, we've always taken the position that the number one harm of pornography is to marriage, to family life. The link to sex crimes, rape, child abuse is another problem, in my opinion. But the main influence of pornography is on guys that they're about to get married, they get married, they've got an addiction to pornography, and if that is going to affect their marriage, in many cases, it's going to ruin their marriage.
Yeah, well, first of all, let me just, for the record, agree with you that we don't want pornography widely available to children, and any kind of pornography that involves children is a crime that shouldn't even be called pornography, because it's so much worse than pornography. I mean, that's a crime against children, period. And shouldn't be part of this conversation. I think we can agree that's something that all of America abhors. But you're talking about families. Back in the 1970s, and Richard Nixon was president, and he convened a panel on what is the effect of pornography. The chairman of the panel was William Lockhart, the dean of the University of Minnesota Law School. There were 14 people on the panel. A majority report, a 622-page majority report, that was signed off on by 12 of the 14 on the panel. 18 members of the panel, was signed off by 16. 2 objected, and Spiro Agnew loudly objected. And this, I'm quoting from this was the only, to the best that I've been able to find, maybe you know of another one, the only official federal executive branch major multi-year study of pornography. I'm reading from Time Magazine, October 12, 1970. Quote, not only is pornography guiltless as a cause of crime, delinquency, deviance, or emotional disturbance, said the majority, it can actually strengthen conjugal ties. That would be as in marriage. And then quoting from it, there are substantial portions of people exposed to erotica believe that the effect on them had been socially desirable. Participants in experiments that exposed married couples to films and literature traditionally reserved for stag parties claimed that the experience lowered inhibitions between husband and wife, increasing the willingness to experiment and heightening the satisfaction with their marital sex life. They go on to say that they think that this is a good, that the research demonstrates that exposure to pornography is actually a good thing for marriage.
Well, I tell you, you know, if it were, you would think that, compare the divorce rates in 1970 with what they are today, and then compare.
They're actually down.
Well, I tell you, I grew up in a day and age when, I tell you, maybe my community was abnormal, but I didn't know many kids whose parents were divorced. Now, in 1970, I would say, and look at the percentage of households that were headed by two-parent families back then, and look at
there are more children being born out of wedlock now, I agree with you.
Look also at the age when young people got married as compared to today, and the percentages that got married. Now, if pornography was going to have all this wonderful effect on marriage, you'd think we'd be close to be living in utopia today. Now,
well, I would submit to you that financial considerations probably have more, you know, I mean, most marriages that break up don't, you know, and you have to acknowledge this, the majority of marriages that break up because of financial stress. That's the number one stressor in relationships.
Well, all I know is that what you were reading from that report, they made the claim that pornography was a good thing for marriage. And I'm making the point, if that were true, you would think that you don't have to be a conservative to be concerned about the breakdown of the family. I mean, you got to be a lunatic not to be.
No, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, 26 years of war on the middle class has brought about a real tragedy for marriage. But I'm just curious, why do conservatives want a big government nanny state to protect us from pornography?
Well, I tell you, I've been working at Morality and Media for 23 years, and to me, there's no question that pornography overall has a negative effect on marriage. And I'll give you a couple. You know, if you stop and usually the man gets into pornography, gets hooked on it. Now, a few things are going to happen if a guy who's married gets hooked on pornography. Number one, he's not going to have any interest in his wife because all of his sexual energies are going to be going into the pornography. Or he's going to want his wife to be behaving like the women that he views in pornography. I don't doubt in some cases she may enjoy doing it. I would say more often she's not going to enjoy doing
it. Now, you're making those as absolute statements.
The third effect on marriage is the acting out phase, you know, where the guy is going to seek out prostitutes or whatever online, make contact. And what I am saying, there hasn't been a scientific study, which is part of the answer to that 1970s. Well, basically what that commission found is that there was no absolute scientific proof that pornography did anything. And that is still true today. But the fact that there's no absolute scientific proof doesn't mean there isn't evidence of harm.
Right. Well, to quote from the study, no warrant for continued governmental interference with the full freedom of adults to obtain, read, or view sexually explicit material. We advocate repeal of all laws curbing adults' access to pornography. Enforcement of anti-smut laws is impossible, time-wasting, and a threat to the free communication of ideas among Americans. I mean, this was Nixon's commission. But in 2004, that was 1970.
No,
2004,
that was
they did a study.
Commission. That was Lyndon Johnson's commission.
You're right. That was the tail end of the,
that commission was stacked by people who agreed with that conclusion. And the 1986 commission, which, you know, the Attorney General's commission, came to the exact opposite conclusion.
Well, in 2004 in Australia, there was a study that included over 1,000 families. It was the title of the study, Understanding Pornography in Australia, is a team led by Dr. Alan McKee. And their conclusion, quote, pornography is actually good for you in many ways.
Well,
it leads married couples to be more relaxed about their sexuality and leads to healthier marriages.
Happen to see there's a stink in Australia right now? It happens to involve, all the problems happening amongst the Aborigines. And one of the problems that's happening amongst the Aborigines is sexual abuse of children. And there's a great big...
But that has probably more to do with poverty.
Wait a second. A great big government report just came out, and I downloaded a copy of it, or at least significant segments of it, about a week or so ago, that links that sexual abuse to pornography. Now, that was just 2007. So,
yeah, although I've worked in the Aboriginal community up in the Lockhart River Valley and in North Queensland in Australia, and these people do not have access to the internet. They can't afford to buy pornographic magazines. I'd say pornography is far more widespread in the white community, where prostitution is also legal in Australia. I'd be glad to, but I tell you, I've been there. I've worked with these people. I mean, it's but in any case, people can check it out at your website if they want to find out more about your position on this. Robert Peters, the website is moralityinmedia.org. You're the president, and we appreciate you coming on the program and having this out with us.
All right,
thank you, Robert. Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program right here on Air America Radio. What do you think? Is smut good for? And who's the major purveyor of it? I'll tell you about that right after this, and we'll get into the wildfires.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
It's good to be king, just for a while. To be there in velvet, yeah, to give them a smile. It's good to get high.
Well, Louise is picking out kinky bumpers again.
It's good to be king of your own little town.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Yes. Well, that ain't the half of it, I'll tell you. Our Jaws alert for the day. Yep. In Canada, Health Canada, which is the Canadian version of our FDA, mandates condom testing. And so this news release from the Canadian, one of the Canadian newspapers, Durex Corporation is looking for 1,000 lucky and lusty Canadians to road test some of the company's new products. Those who are chosen will be sent a free supply of condoms, lubricants, and a relatively new vibrating ring. Condom testing regulated by Health Canada, which means everyone goes through a rigorous round before it's market ready. Durex will take applications for its product testers through its website at durexcondomtester.ca. And one of the things that the Durex Corporation points out is when the company made similar offers in other countries, including Australia and Malaysia, it was swamped with eager applicants. Oh, David, you're applying for the job, David?
Yeah, I was just kidding.
Okay,
but yeah, sounds good.
Oh, yeah, okay, all right. So we have one applicant already. Let's look out. In the meantime, Mitt Romney is being criticized for having been on the board of directors of Marriott for a decade, when Marriott is, quote, a major pornographer, end quote, according to Phil Barres, president of Citizens for Community Values, an anti-porn group based in Ohio. He points out the Marriott hotels offer 70 different types of hardcore pornography, end quote. It's a lucrative business, by the way. Estimates vary widely, but probably about $500 million a year, according to John Harmer, who was Reagan's lieutenant governor in California. $500 million a year is the money that hotels are making in the United States selling hardcore pornography to people who stay in the hotels. And, in fact, some suggest that this is the profit margin for hotels these days. As Roger Connor, a spokesman for Marriott, said defending Mitt Romney's being on the board as the company was purveying pornography, quote, "It certainly would have been wrong to impose his own personal beliefs if they were contrary to the financial interests of the company," end quote. After all, what's a little porn when we're making money? Well, that's the position of many of these hotel chains, apparently. 5% to 10% of the total revenue that hotel chains get from hardcore pornography. Who are the other biggest purveyors of hardcore porn? Well, some of the internet service providers, AT&T and whatnot. And then this interesting study, a 10% increase in net access yields a 7.3% decrease in reported rapes, according to Clemson University professor Todd Kendall. He says even after you control for all the obvious confounding variables, such as alcohol consumption, police presence, poverty, and unemployment rates and population density, there's still this absolute correlation that as porn accessibility goes up, rape goes down. I find that fascinating because I had always been told that rape was a crime of violence, not of sex. My suspicion is that it is both. That it is both. But, you know, time will tell. We'll see. And moral values in the blue states, the red states. Why is it? I mean, setting aside just for a moment, I suppose, this whole issue of whether pornography leads to divorce. Frankly, here we have an Australian study and a U.S. study, which both conclude that pornography can actually increase the strength of a marriage or access to it or watching it as a family or as a couple, rather. We obviously don't want kids in it. in it or seen it. But the why is it that the red states, the conservative red states, have the highest divorce rates in America and the blue states have the lowest divorce rates in the United States? Massachusetts, 5.7 divorces per 1,000 married people. That's what, one half, would that be 5.7%? No, that would be 0.5%, about half a percent, compared with 10.8 in Kentucky, 11.1 in Mississippi, 12.7 in Arkansas, divorces per 1,000 married people. And by the way, if you look at the 30-year trends, I know that there was recently a series of articles that were put out by one of the conservative groups saying, oh, my God, the last 10 years, divorces up radically. Well, what was happening was they were looking at a very skewed and flawed set of statistics. When you actually look at divorce rates decade by decade over the last three decades, what you find is that the divorce rate in the United States has actually steadily gone down. Now, what has gone up somewhat is out of wedlock children, but they're not necessarily in single parent homes. There's a big debate about this. How many of these kids are actually being born into single family homes, single parent homes? And it may well be, there's dueling statistics out there, it may well be that that number is actually going down as well. And that this simply reflects societal trends. That is specifically that people are more comfortable living together and or having children together without getting the legal sanction of marriage. So, anyhow, what does that have to do with porn? Who knows? 1-866-303-2270. Take your calls on the topic. Why do conservatives want big government nanny states to protect us from pornography? You can also drop by our live chat room at TomHartmann.com, our blog at AirAmerica.com. Share your thoughts on the topic. Just click Tom Hartmann. You get to AirAmerica.com, click the Tom Hartmann page. It'll take you right over to our blog. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartmann Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Yep, look out all you pornographers out there. Marriott, Hilton, AT&T, Comcast, Verizon. It's the 20th annual Rap Week. The White Ribbon Against Pornography, declared by Morality and Media. They're coming to get you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Chris in Michigan. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to comment on what your guest earlier said, trying to make a correlation between pornography and divorce. I know he said things were different when he was young, and somehow that makes it right. Also, segregation was probably around a lot more back then, too. But what I think the problem between relationships isn't the pornography. I think it has to do with lack of communication. The religious right tries to convince America that pornography is wrong. So when a person in a relationship then watches it, they feel guilty about it, and they keep it from their spouse. And I'd say that if you've been married for a while, that's the wrong time to be finding out what your partner really likes sexually in a relationship or not. That's stuff that should be discovered way before marriage.
Yeah, good point. And in family counseling, I realize there's a debate in the field about this, but there are some folks who suggest that pornography actually is one of the tools that can be used in marital counseling when it comes to issues of sexuality, without getting more explicit than that. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Good point. Chad in Portland. Hey, Chad.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Along the same vein, I guess. This whole issue with pornography assumes that there is, a lot of assumption is made when trying to make a correlation between pornography and divorce.
I'm just saying, over the last 30 years, the divorce rate in the United States has not gone up. It has gone down slightly, and the availability of pornography has exploded. I don't think that there's any correlation at all.
Exactly.
What we have seen is an 80%, 85% decline in rape in the United States over the last 25 years.
Right. It takes out of the equation individual responsibility with regards to the marriage. I mean, it's assuming that men, you know, are the reason for divorce, and that it's all, you know, associated with pornography. It takes out every socio and economic factor in the whole deal.
I think, you know, ultimately, you know, the one point that I agree with Robert Peters on of morality and media is that the science is completely ambiguous on this, that you can find studies that suggest that maybe there's a slight negative influence on marriages. For example, if one person in the marriage is typically the man is fascinated by pornography, shall we say, you can find other studies that indicate that it may help marriages. The bottom line is there's really most of the evidence indicates that it's pretty much a net neutral. It's not that big a deal. And you know, so I just say, you know, we're all consenting adults here. And as long as we're not talking about anything that affects, influences, or contains children in any way, you know, that gets near them, as long as we're not talking about that, which we all agree is not only a crime, but goes way beyond pornography, then this should be about consenting adults, period.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's just, you know, that's the bottom line. Chad, thanks a lot for the call. And, you know, good point. Dave in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Dave.
Hello, Tom. I don't want to dilute the two, but it does touch all the way down to Jocelyn Elders as far as what her schooling was about how to raise healthy children.
Yeah, Jocelyn Elders, the former Attorney General of the United States who talked about masturbation being a useful thing, and bang, she was history. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir. That was a beautiful moment in history. We could have made such great strides. Where is the liberalism in this country? We need to be led. We had an opportunity and we failed immensely. But my point of calling, I forgot what my point was, Tom.
Well, that's okay, Dave. I appreciate the call. And, you know, raising Jocelyn Elders was a nice start. That was great. Lance in Huntington Beach, California. Hey, Lance.
Hey, how you doing? I apologize if my truck's kind of loud this morning, but I just wanted to kind of chime in. You guys were talking about the correlation between divorce rates and pornography. I really don't think they're linked. I actually manage an adult novelty store, you know, that sort of thing. And most of the people that I actually get in the store are couples that are coming in, and they've been married for 10, 15 years, and they're just, you know, they're more couple aides than anything else. I don't think pornography is strictly a bad thing. I mean,
The phrase for years has been marital aids, and it turns out that actually there's a lot of truth to that, and there actually are therapists out there, and a substantial number of them, who recommend things like you know, visiting your what used to be called a porn shop, your adult store, whatever, as an aid to marriage.
Absolutely, absolutely, and really that's the biggest percentage of people that actually come to visit me are just people who want to spice things up. I would actually say more than pornography, more than anything else, the key to a relationship is probably communication. And that's something that kept coming up over and over as I've been listening to you this morning. So
Thank you, Lance. Thank you, Lance. Well said. Thank you very much. Mary in San Francisco. Hey, Mary.
Hi. I was listening to the guy, and he just assumes that everybody that touches pornography is addicted to it. And I think that, you know, it's more like, you know, people who sometimes drink alcohol and they just can't quit, because, you know, I use pornography and I drag my partner into using it every once in a while, and we do it maybe twice a month. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, just because someone looks at pornography doesn't mean that they're, you know, holed up in their bedroom or something. I think he needs to start a 12-step program for the people that he's worried about. And just like alcoholism or any addiction, you know, gambling, it's going to break up a marriage, you know. But, you know,
there are kind of shades of prohibition in this, you know, of the folks, I forget what the prohibitionists, there was a term for them that, you know, in the late 20s and early 30s who were arguing, who successfully actually argued for a constitutional amendment against the sale of alcohol in the United States. And their point was, this is an addictive substance. And, you know, of course, it's true of alcohol. I'm sure it's true of pornography, just as you point out, it's true of gambling. Apparently true of the Internet itself. There, you know, there's this whole thing of Internet addiction. Games, video games, there's talk about addiction to that. I think what we're talking about here is that there are addictive personalities, and that right. some people can become addicted to anything. And
right. so
and
why
that
throw
should,
out everything?
Right. So that and that should be addressed as a medical problem, not as a criminal problem. But some, you know, for some reason, conservatives want the government to stick their business in our bedrooms, or stick their guns in our bedrooms. And
you know, I think that people that come out strongly against anything have a problem with it themselves. I mean, this is just my opinion, but you know, the biggest homophobic people usually are afraid that they're homophobic themselves. So, you know, I just think that the people that are so strongly against it, it's somehow, you know, their own fear, because there's a lot of us out there that use pornography or look at it, and you know, maybe 2 months before we want to look at it again. So
yeah, do so in a healthy way. Well, that's good, Annie Marie. And yeah, let's keep in mind, Larry Craig has one of the most anti-gay voting records in all of the Senate. Mary, thank you for the call. Doug in New Hampshire. Hey, Doug, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. It seems to me, I mean, everybody here seems to be saying the same thing but in different perspectives, but it's what we all already know. It's a personality type that isn't confident with their own ability to resist temptation, so they have to have it legislated, and they don't. That way, they don't have to worry about it.
Conservatives want to legislate morality and self-control because they themselves don't feel that they can control themselves, so they want an external authority, the police,
well,
the laws, to do it for them.
Exactly. They always need an external authority, whether it's the church or the government or the military or whoever. It has to be a big father figure who tells you, do this or don't do that, because they themselves aren't confident they can make the right choice. I mean, it's the same personality trait that essentially makes up the whole belief and worldview system that they have.
Yeah, you're right, and that's the worldview that John Dean wrote about in his book Conservatives Without a Conscience,
exactly.
to some extent, and to a larger extent. It's the worldview that, you just see on display all the time among these guys. Yeah, good point, Doug. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Al in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Al.
Yeah, hi. When I was practicing law back in the 70s and the 80s, from about 76 to 84, I probably did well over 200 divorces. Not one divorce was predicated on pornography. Typically, it was financial or it was abuse. But never once have I ever heard anyone use as a basis for that pornography. And I would assume that there are a lot of lawyers listening to you who, of course, do domestic law. And invariably, I would say that they would give you the same position that I've just given you. I heard the fellow that spoke with you earlier, and, of course, I'm from his generation. And during the time that he talked about there being two parents that typically divorce was not frequent, or at least he didn't in his own experience recognize it. Well, in 76 in California, we changed our divorce law to no fault. Most states have done that now. You don't need a reason. Then you needed a reason, but there was another more important reason. During that period of time, people were employed. Unions were strong. Income was high, especially with respect to the cost of living during that period of time. In the 50s and the 60s, my mother stayed home. My father worked.
Because she could. Because your father could raise a family on one paycheck. I mean, same
That's
in my
right.
family. And increasingly, as a result of 26 years of conservative warfare on the middle class, that's not the case in America. Al, brilliant. Thank you very much for the call, and well said. Much appreciated. 45 minutes past the hour. Why do conservatives want a big government, what they call nanny state, to protect us from pornography, among other things? Stick around.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
And just a reminder, this Friday night, I'll be signing books at the Elliott Bay Bookstore, 101 South Main Street at 7:30 p.m. And on October 27th, on Saturday, I'll be receiving the first place in the Project Censored Award, one of the great journalism awards, or, in my opinion, one of the great journalism awards, probably, because I won it this year. Actually, it is. It truly is. projectcensored.org, I believe, is their website. And I'll also be giving a speech at that at Sonoma University. On November 3rd, we'll be in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I will be the keynote speaker at the Holistic Management International Conference. That's a closed conference, I believe. But later that day, on November 3rd, I will be signing books at Hastings Books and Music at 5 p.m. That's at the northwest corner of Tramway and Candelaria in Albuquerque. So check it out. Drop by. Say hi. The issue here, you know, if I had to look back and say, you know, what do I want to do in radio? I don't think defending pornography would be at the top of my list of things I ever want to do. But the issue here is a larger one, and it's not just conservatives wanting a nanny state that looks into our bedrooms and all that kind of thing. It's the essential difference between conservative morality and liberal morality. Conservatives typically, and you know, for whatever reason, and frankly, I have some theories about this, but let's just look at what's at the surface. Conservatives typically, their definition of morality is, what are you doing in your private life? Who are you sleeping with? How are you sleeping with them? What are you smoking? What are you taking? Are you getting high? Oh, my God. That's conservative morality. Liberal morality, on the other hand, historically tracks the morality of the major religions of the world. It says what, and not just the religions, the major philosophies of the world, from humanism to Judaism and Christianity, I mean, right across the board. It says, if there are hungry among us, we can't call ourselves moral. If there are homeless among us, we cannot call ourselves moral. If there are sick among us who are not being tended to, we cannot call ourselves moral. If there are those in prison among us who are not being cared for appropriately so that when they come out they can create a new life, we cannot call ourselves moral. That's liberal morality. And by and large, you know, what you do in your own bedroom is your own damn business. That's liberal morality. And I think that it's a very interesting and very clear distinction. And one that's worth making. 1-866-303-2270, your telephone number. Lynn in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Lynn, what's on your mind today?
Well, if I could add to what you said about liberal versus conservative morality, I think that conservative morality is a lot about on what terms do I judge others, and progressive morality is having to do with by what terms must I judge myself and my own conduct.
Well, that's a good point.
And I don't know if you meant to totally take off the issue of child pornography. My concern with this, as someone with extensive experience and research into child protection issues, is about the extent to which public policy and public discourse are dominated by these very sexy, exciting issues that don't really have to do with contact sex offenses and protecting actual children, that people are more activated by the idea of protecting images and engaging with intervention in images, which is such a small percentage of the child sexual abuse that goes on. And, of course, child sexual abuse is only about 10% of all maltreatment, but it's really the only kind that we're excited to talk about.
I agree with you, Lynn, and that's, as I said, I just wanted to take that off the table for the purposes of this discussion, because at least for today, I mean, we can deal with this some other day, but we're talking about adult pornography, consenting adults. We all agree anything involving children is a crime, and rightly so. But thank you for the call. Emmanuel in Ohio. Hey, Emmanuel.
Tom, how you doing? Good afternoon, sir.
Just great, but I'll get better.
Good. I think you, the previous caller, Doug, had it absolutely right. He hit the nail on the head. They push for this legislation because they can't control themselves. I think there's a big underlying factor, like you said, it's fear of these women who think they can't measure up to the women that their husbands look at on film or on DVD. I think it's fear of the men who have this self-loathing of, why am I using this? You know, during the weekends, and then on Sunday I'm in church preaching this or that. It all comes down to self-esteem and how they conduct themselves.
Well, the major thing that's attacking, good point, Emmanuel, and I would add, the major thing that's attacking self-esteem in this culture is traditional mainstream advertising. I mean, the studies that were done, there was a famous study that was done at Harvard by Harvard University. I quoted it in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. It was done about 15 years ago or so. In Ireland, one of the islands associated with Fiji, or a part of Fiji, where they had never before had television. And it was one of the first quote, modern communities. It was an Aboriginal community, but it was a modern community, you know, schools and everything, where they were actually able to watch what happened to the children, the adolescents, and the adults when television came in. Because the government actually brought in satellites and cablized an entire city, or a large community, actually, what would be more like a county, a couple hundred thousand people. And what they found was that the anorexia rate among teenage girls, anorexia and bulimia, went from unmeasurable, something that was unknown in their society, up to around 7%. I mean, it exploded. And because these were the indigenous people, the Fijians tend to be kind of stocky anyway. And right. And this had nothing to do with pornography. This had to do with commercial advertising. And right. And so I think that's the biggest area where people have to, where we're really getting whacked by, images of perfection, right? Richard in Chester County, Pennsylvania. Hey, and thank you for the call, Manuel. Hey, Richard, got about a half a minute here.
Oh, wrap this hour. I have a lot to say. Okay, number one, roll the clock back 100 years. We had the same debate about alcohol.
Yep.
And we outlawed alcohol. That really did us a lot of good, didn't it?
Yeah, it led to a huge crime wave, an explosion
exactly.
of crime, an explosion of wealth for Joe Kennedy. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, one other point. The other side, the Republicans have a tough dilemma. They have to represent the other 2 or 3% of the population, the upper 2 or 3%, and get more than 50% of the population to vote their way. So they
right.
got to divert into more moral issues, family things.
No, I absolutely agree, Richard, and your point is well taken, and I keep making it on this program, that the Republican agenda is all about the wealthiest 1% of America. But they talk about other things to try and bring everybody else along. 57 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Well, here it is in black and white. The headline says it all. A quote from the fire chief, the head of the fire department for Orange County. If we had more air resources, we would have been able to control this fire. Pretty straightforward. Pretty straightforward stuff. And this harkens back, by the way, welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. This harkens back to an article in the San Francisco Chronicle back in May. Keep in mind, this is October. Pointing out that the National Guard in California, the California National Guard, was, quote, depleted, end quote, and that, quote, severe equipment shortages could hinder the Guard's response to a large-scale disaster such as a major fire, end quote. Why? Because just like in New Orleans when Katrina and Rita hit, half, more or less, of all the National Guard's men and women and their equipment, about half of it is in Iraq, or half of them are in Iraq, depending on how you want to construct that sentence. San Francisco Chronicle reporting that over $1 billion worth of equipment missing from the California National Guard. Not missing like vanished, missing like in Iraq. I mean, this is so much like Nero fiddles while Rome burns. Bush unwilling to have a draft, unwilling to bolster the military, dragging these guys who joined the National Guard because they wanted to be available to do exactly what is happening right now in California, to stop fires before they get so bad. Those of you who were listening I think it was about 3 weeks ago, Louise and I spent the weekend down in San Diego. And we did the show from KLSD, our affiliate there, on a Friday afternoon, or Friday morning, Pacific time. And we were staying with a dear friend of ours, who we've known for many years, who lives in the suburbs up north of San Diego. Got an email from Paul this morning. Half the houses in his neighborhood have been burned down. He can't get to his house. The only way that he thinks that his house hasn't been burned down yet is that he, from time to time, calls his own home and his answering machine answers. And he's guessing that if the house burned down, that in the process of burning down the house, the answering machine would have gotten, you know, melted and wouldn't work anymore. And so as long as his answering machine is still answering the phone, he's assuming that his house is still there. These fires that many are now speculating could have been nipped in the bud if the California National Guard had simply been there. I mean, back in May, back 5 months ago, 6 months ago, May, June, July, August, September, October, yes, 6 months ago, Barbara Boxer, the senator from California, quote, this is in the San Francisco Chronicle, in May, right now we are down 50% in terms of our National Guard equipment because they're all in Iraq. The equipment, half of the equipment, we really will need help. The lieutenant governor of California, John Garamendi, on Hardball said, what we really need are those firefighters. We need the equipment, and frankly, we need those troops back from Iraq. How much more unambiguous does it get? At the same time, Dan Shapley, writing over at thedailygreen.com, you know, one of the green news sites, notes, in a scientific paper published a year ago and co-authored by Tom Swetnam of the University of Arizona's Laboratory of Tree Ring Research and Anthony Westerling of the University of California, San Diego's Scripps Institution of Oceanography, scientists concluded that the changing climate was a greater influence on wildfire activity and intensity than forest management. See, this is how the Bushies are trying to spin this. Oh, of course you're having forest fires. You haven't cut down enough trees. Or as Ronald Reagan said, you know, trees are the source of pollution. Of course you got so much pollution. You got too many trees. Well, the trees are the lungs and the kidneys of our planet to a large extent. A single tree can hold about 50,000 can trap in the root ball and the tree itself 50,000 gallons of water. So you don't end up with floods, with water quickly running off. So you do end up with water being held, moisture being held in the soil. The problem is when the climate changes, And you get drought for year after year after year, that tree just, you know, I mean, there are limits. As Dan Shapley points out, there were four times as many major wildfires between 1986 and 2004 as there were from 1970 to 1986. And a six-fold increase in the area of forest burned in the western United States. This has nothing to do or very little to do with forest management. This has to do with a changing climate. The active wildfire season is now 2 months longer than it was 30 years ago. Snowpacks in the mountains are melting earlier, between a week and a month, depending on where you look in the United States. This is just in North America, just in the United States. Between a week and a month earlier than they were 50 years ago, depending on where you are geographically and what the elevation is. And snowpack is responsible for about three-quarters of all your river and stream flow. And so you melt it early and you end up with drought at the end of the year, like now. So here we have this confluence of disasters brought to us courtesy of the Bush administration, the Republicans in the House of Representatives in the United States Senate, and their friends in the oil industry and the polluting and the coal industry and the other polluting industries. Oh, there's no such thing as global warming. Don't look at that man behind the curtain. And, well, you know, if you're going to have forest fires, the only way to stop them is to do away with the forests. Yeah. In fact, in large parts of these areas, these fires are going through areas that are not manageable forests. They're not, you know, it's not even an issue of forest management. It's scrubland. But it's so dried out. And then they say, well, it's cyclical. You know, back in 1050, the tree rings indicate that the Anasazi were wiped out by a 60-year drought. True. it's cyclical. And when you overlay that with a 100 parts per million increase in carbon dioxide levels, so we're now approaching carbon dioxide levels that we haven't seen since 400 million years ago, before there were humans on this planet, which would take us to a climate that would be fairly inhospitable, at least for our current, you know, the current way that we're doing things, for current levels of agriculture and transport and all of our cities on the coasts and things like that, levels of ocean, levels of rivers. I mean, it's just, it may not wipe out the human race, but it's going to create a major recalibration. I caught two big stories today in the Financial Times about how the price of food is going through the roof. They're talking now about food wars, about famine stalking the world again. In large part because growing patterns are changing, because deserts are growing. And, of course, population is exploding, continuing to. It's like the perfect storm. And none of it is being addressed by these guys.
Oh, you know, we can't have birth control. Are you kidding? That's wrong. And we can't teach anything except abstinence. And we can't help other nations with family planning. And we can't do anything about the climate. You know, it's after all, that would slow down economic growth. Well, you could argue that the forest fires, probably some conservative will come along and try arguing that the forest fires are a great thing. There will be a boom in economic activity in Southern California as they're rebuilding all these houses. This is that point that is made so eloquently by Adbusters. I'll share the clip with you after the break, where they basically say disasters are profitable. They do generate economic activity. But as Bobby Kennedy so eloquently pointed out back in, as I recall, 1966 or 67, you know, is this the kind of economic activity we want? No. No, it's not. We do not want a disaster-driven economy any more than we want a war-driven economy. Let's be rebuilding our schools and our hospitals and our roads and our infrastructure. Let's be building our civic institutions. And let's be jump-starting an entire industry of renewable energy so that we can remediate or back away from this global climate change that we're experiencing, and let's get out of Iraq so that our firefighters can come back to California. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Daniel Weiss is with us. He's with the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, a senior fellow and director of climate strategy with the center. Hey, Daniel.
Hi, how are you?
Just great. Great to have you on with us. The wildfires in California. What's the best scientific take on what's bringing this about?
Well, first, it's important to note that there has been almost no measurable rain in the Los Angeles area over the last 150 days, which creates a situation where your brush and your trees are very dry and make much better fuel for a blaze than if there was more moisture. And that all it takes, as you know, is some embers to fly in the air and land on some dry brush to keep the fire going. And with the Santa Ana winds, that happens a lot. Now, one of the things that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change had predicted early this year is that with global warming, we will see an increase in the frequency and ferocity of wildfires, and that they said that North America can look forward to more devastation.
Now, what about the Fox News reports here that this is actually Al-Qaeda?
Here's Allison Camerana. An FBI memo from early, from late in June of this year is popping up this morning, and it's ominous.
This actually has happened for many years in the past as well. An FBI memo sent out to local law enforcement said that an Al-Qaeda detainee had given them some information that the next wave of terrorism could be in the form of setting wildfires.
So what? I'm sorry, Daniel. Pardon my laughing, but Fox News reporting that this is all the fault of Al-Qaeda.
Well, it's possible because they believe that arson was one of the ingredients that got the fire going, but the element that makes it so ferocious has been the lack of rainfall in this basin, and that is what made it, and the, combined with the winds, made it such a huge fire. Because there frequently arson is at the root of a lot of wildfires that in Southern California in the past.
Yeah, but I don't think that Osama bin Laden has claimed credit for this, has he?
I don't believe so either. But what's more important is that if people really believe that they're worried about terrorists lighting fires, then they ought to strongly support action to reduce global warming pollution, because global warming is going to contribute to conditions where fires happen more frequently and are more ferocious. And so if you're really concerned about this, then that's the position you ought to take.
That's really the bottom line. I've seen several stories recently, mostly in the British press, although a few of them have been picked up in the U.S. press, coming out of the science media, the science press, about many of our carbon sinks, including large chunks of our oceans, no longer sinking out carbon dioxide like they used to.
Yes, that's very possible. And in fact, one of the elements that's very troubling about the wildfires is that you're taking brush, shrubs, and trees, which normally absorb carbon, and instead, when they're on fire, they actually emit lots of carbon. So you're basically turning a carbon sink into a carbon hose. And that will then increase global warming pollution, increase global warming, and therefore will increase the circumstances where more fires occur in the future. In effect, it's sort of like a snowball rolling down a hill that gets bigger as it moves faster towards the bottom.
Right, or a thermostat that should turn the furnace off when you reach a certain temperature, desirable temperature, but instead when it warms up to that temperature, it turns the furnace on even higher.
Yes,
it's a positive feedback loop.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, what's interesting is in the Siberia and other parts of northern Russia, they are seeing the beginning signs of melting of their permafrost, the ground that's permanently frozen all year round. And that permafrost is made up of organic material that when it thaws will give off methane. In fact, one of the things that's there, and I kid you not, is mastodon feces. And when this thaws, it will let off methane, which is a far more dangerous global warming pollutant than carbon dioxide, which will then speed up global warming, speed up the thawing of the permafrost, and speed up the methane release. It's sort of like the doomsday machine in Dr. Strangelove, except this is real, and once it starts, it's going to be nearly impossible to turn it off.
Yeah, any sense of whether we've reached the tipping point? I've seen some science that suggests we might have hit it last year.
Well, it's interesting because there is increasing evidence that things that were predicted to happen 20 or 30 years from now, like, for example, the retreat of the Greenland ice sheet, are actually happening now. The level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that they've been measuring now is what they thought it would be 20 years from now. And that's why we believe here that it's very important we act today to start reducing our global warming emissions. And as you know, since President Bush took office, our global warming pollutions increased by about 168 million tons.
Wow. Daniel Weiss, the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. You can read all about it over there. Senior Fellow and Director of Climate Strategy with the Center. Daniel, thanks for sharing your knowledge and expertise with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Much appreciate you dropping by. 27 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270, our number, TomHartmann.com and AirAmerica.com, our websites.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Ben Bernanke is the 14th chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Every breath you take, every change of rate, jobs you don't create, while we still stagflate, I'll be watching you. Every single day.
Well, at least the yield curve has flipped back, but sales of existing homes crashing. 12 out of 14 previous months now. This is one of the very worst. Sales of existing homes dropping about 8% for September, the most recent month reported. The recession, apparent recession, coming recession, I don't know. What is it going to be? Most Americans say we're in recession. Well, we're not if you earn over $3.5 million a year. But or if you make your living sitting on your butt around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive and paying a maximum 15% income tax, or if you make more than $95,000, $90,000, what is it, $92,000, whatever it is for the top for Social Security, and all the rest of your income you don't pay a penny in Social Security taxes on, life's pretty good. But for the rest of us, no. And just a quick note here, and we'll pick up your phone calls, but just a quick note, Iraq is now being bombed by a foreign country using aircraft and weapons made by another foreign country. The foreign country that's bombing them, Turkey, the weapons made by the United States. Turkish warplanes joined, this is from today's New York Times, joined Sikorsky and Cobra military helicopters in southeastern Turkey today in attacks on the broad mountainous passes the Kurdish separatist rebels used to travel from hideouts in northern Iraq into Turkey, according to the state-run Anatolian news agency. Boy, the foreign policy of this administration is so competent. These guys are so together. Well, it's tragic. It's truly tragic. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Gary in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, Gary, welcome to the program.
Time I'm calling regarding the Fox News alert about Al-Qaeda setting these fires.
Yes, sir.
I used to live in San Diego County in the 80s. In fact, I was a volunteer fire chief in a volunteer fire department right next to the Wild Animal Park out in the north side of San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And this fire, give you how close it is, several of the homes right in the community where I lived at the time, I've moved away since, burned. And that fire started and moved about 30 miles in a matter of less than a day. Because of the wind, because of the low humidity. When I was a fire chief down there, I remember at that time, this was back in the early 80s, several times where there would be 8, 10 fires set in different locations by people, firebugs we called them.
Mm-hmm.
And we had another fire go through there at that time. And, you know, it's a shame that they have to take and hype something up like this and make something up like this. If there was any evidence to indicate that, I've not seen it, because if, for instance, there was somebody doing that, you would have had many, many more fires. You really don't have that many fires, especially considering they've had wind gusts of over 100 miles an hour and sustained winds of in the 70s and 80s for a significant amount of time. This is just nonsense and ridiculous and
fear-mongering. So your point is that Fox News' report that Osama bin Laden is behind the fires is absurd, that there may be arsonists, but they're just garden variety crazies that have always been there.
Absolutely. One more comment. If they had any idea of this, this shows nothing but their incompetence to a greater degree. I read in the paper just yesterday that a day or two before the fire started, they released all the seasonal fire workers from off the lines. And I also read that they were working to get special high-velocity air tankers into the area from the East Coast and Montana or Utah or someplace. I don't remember where it was now. But, you know, if they had any idea of this happening, those facilities would have been in the area. Now, I don't believe necessarily Washington would have been, the Homeland Security might have been competent enough to do it, but I know the people down in that community, the fire chiefs, the stuff that have been down there, they would have had those people, their contract extended if they'd had any idea that there was this type of thing.
Yeah.
So
it's
a bunch of baloney, that's all.
Okay, good point, Gary. Thanks a lot for the call and for weighing in and for sharing your experience in that area. I appreciate it. Ed in Hillsboro, Oregon. Hey, Ed.
Well, hi, Tom. You know, I'm just so tired of people being afraid of the boogeyman. You were asking a little while ago what's wrong with the red states, and what we need to understand is that red state is not just part of the political geography. Red state is first of all, a state of mind driven by fear and insecurity. And this red state, state of mind is constantly projecting its innermost fears on everyone else. And with regards to this fire situation here, it seems to me that, the one thing that Fox is trying to do is deflect the conversation away from global warming onto a boogeyman, because, they don't want to face up to the idea that all those SUVs are putting carbon into the atmosphere and, what that might imply. So rather than face, what is really going on, that we have climate change going on and the weather's getting drier and it's producing more fuel and conditions that are ideal for wildfires, they just want to throw it all off on, some fairy tale about Al Qaeda. And, what we need to do is get out of the red state of mind. We need to snap our collective mentality out of that. And, what we need is laughter. We need to laugh at these people when they say ridiculous stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well said, Ed. And we also need to remember.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
And he was speaking about economics at the time. This was long before World War II that Franklin Roosevelt said that. Over at the Business and Media Institute, we've had, actually on this program a number of times, conservatives from the Business and Media Institute taking positions, as I recall, on global warming. The conservative position, there ain't no such thing. They're attacking now Anderson Cooper, because Anderson Cooper 360, which was filmed some time ago, I don't know if it was weeks or months, but it's this thing has been in the can for a while, and it's going to be playing soon. What, next week, the week after? I'm not sure the exact date. Maybe it's starting now. Maybe it's already started. In any case, Anderson Cooper 360 in the line of fire, Anderson Cooper says, people are wondering if these fires are a result of global warming in some way. And so the Business Media Institute going after him. Right? You can't even talk about that topic. It ain't right. Not fair. Might harm the profits of ExxonMobil. We can't have that. Marianne in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Marianne, welcome to the program.
Ah, fine. Thank you. Very good to talk to you, Tom. I've been listening for a long time, and this is my first time calling. Actually, in the course of listening to your show, I had about three or four different topics I could chime into, but the one that's been pending on my mind the most lately, and you're probably one of the few people that's really hep to it, the trifecta, and it goes back to the resources not being there for fires and natural disasters, but when you look at, the Republican Congress, in one of their last efforts before the Democrats took over, repealed the Posse Comitatus Act, buried inside a huge budget bill.
Right, inside the John Warner Defense Appropriation Bill. And Posse Comitatus, for our listeners who don't know, is the law that was passed during Reconstruction, as I recall, in the late 1870s after the Civil War, that said never again will the American military be allowed to pull its guns out and point them at American citizens on American soil.
Right. So if everything's on the up and up, number one, why did they feel like they had to sneak around and repeal Posse Comitatus out of nowhere? Number two, a couple months right after that, Bush federalized the National Guard.
Yeah.
Okay, and now it's starting to come out in the open, but some of us have known about this for a long time, of the privatization of our military and Blackwater not being under any kind of there seems to be no checks and balances when it comes to them. That and even them accounting for how they've spent the money that the taxpayers have doled out to them.
Yeah, and it's not just Blackwater. There are more mercenaries in Iraq than there are U.S. soldiers.
Right, and the three of these things to me seem to be coming together like a perfect storm. I mean, who's to say there will even be an 08 election? I know that sounds way paranoid, but as weeks and months go by, this little inkling I had in my gut is becoming more and more validated
with every newscast, it seems.
Yeah. Marianne, a lot of us are watching the exact same patterns, the loss of posse comitatus, the loss of habeas corpus, the increased overreaching of federalization and things like that, and getting concerned, frankly.
Can we get our elected officials to be aware and to reinstate
the way to do that, Marianne, is we have to contact them. We put the phone numbers up at callcongress.org. You can check that out, and there's all the phone numbers. You can call your member of Congress. I'm concerned about the possibility of this. 45 minutes past.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Oh, yeah, it's looking pretty good. Having said that, we really need to concern ourselves with this pattern that has been put into place by the Republicans before the Democrats took control of Congress, and frankly, since then, in many cases with the Democrats rolling over, I really don't think that the United States has been set up for a military dictatorship. I mean, it's keep in mind, Germany had only experimented with democracy for a couple of decades in their entire history. We've been doing it for a couple of hundred years. More, you know, yeah, I'll acknowledge it's not perfect. It's imperfect. But it's gotten better. Decade after decade, century after century, it's gotten better. And we've held nearer and dearer to the ideals of democracy in the United States, small d democracy in the United States. And I just really think if anybody were to come along and say, okay, this is it, we're gonna suspend the elections, any president, we're gonna suspend the elections. It's a state of national emergency because we've got fires, or we just got another city got the buildings got hit or whatever, or a nuke went off in some place. I don't think the American people would stand for it. I don't think the Congress would stand for it. I really think that would be a threshold that we the people and our elected representatives would not allow to be passed. That said, I think it's entirely appropriate that we talk about it so that if somebody does try to pull it, we can be here to push back. Mike in Hanover, Pennsylvania. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Great show as usual. I'm on the rawstory.com right now, and there's an article in there about Fox anchors spreading fears of Al-Qaeda linked to the fires.
Right.
Well, in the first paragraph, it has questionable 4-year-old FBI memo is being presented as new to stroke terror fears.
Right. This was a 2003 memo, and it was probably the consequence of torture.
Exactly.
And the guy, the, quote, Al-Qaeda operative, end quote, who was probably tortured and who said, yes, yes, we're going to burn down your country, named four states, and California was not one of those four states. So, you know, he was at Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and Nevada, I think.
They're just reporting it as being a new story, like 5 days old, and it was back in June of 2003.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely bizarre. You're absolutely right, Mike, and thanks for pointing it out. It's fear-mongering of the worst kind. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Susan in Point Reyes, California. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Tom. How are you today?
Just fine. What's up?
I quickly wanted to inform your readers of an incredible documentary that's touring the country right now entitled What a Way to Go, Life at the End of Empire.
Mm-hmm.
We here in Point Reyes, California, are fortunate enough to have it at our community center, which will be this Friday, October 26th at 7 o'clock. It's a really terrific documentary that touches on such things as climate change, a resource crisis, environmental meltdown, and I guess in general just the demise of the American lifestyle.
That's great. Susan, tell us very quickly one more time what the title of the movie is.
Yes, the title of the movie is What a Way to Go, Life at the End of Empire.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call and the heads up. And sorry, I chopped you there. But Richard in Belmede, New Jersey. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. What's up?
Great, great program. One of the most intelligent talk shows that is out there today. And incidentally, I totally agree with your overall take on this corporatocracy that's got going and the rollback of the New Deal programs. That's it in a nutshell. But I also wanted to mention, and in relation to these wildfires and other natural disasters that are taking place, I'd like to see folks in the public start to connect the dots, because it seems as though global warming has a great deal to do with all of these terrible natural disasters, and the corporations have had a great deal to do with causing global warming because they've refused to be good corporate citizens and reduce their emissions. And as a result, you have all these terrible calamities, and the government has to go in and give aid and tap natural disaster funds and so forth, and that happens to be the people's money. The corporations are not going to be taxed to support relief of these natural disasters. The people are.
Right,
so
and in
I
fact, corporations who back in the 1950s under Eisenhower, that Republican, were paying about 50% of all the taxes in the United States, are now paying about 7% of all the taxes in the United States.
That's my next point, Tom, and that's exactly the point I wanted to make to you for a long time. That, I think, needs to be gotten out there, and they need to be exposed. When they say they're going to reduce your taxes, they're the enablers that have allowed the corporations to avoid their taxes for the last 50 years and shifted the whole tax burden onto the back of the people. So now, to add insult to injury, they're telling them they're the ones that did it to the people, and now we're telling the people, elect us because you're being taxed too much.
Right.
It seems to me that that is a pretty easy proposition and actual fact to get out to the people and wake them up and get them to connect the dots.
No, you're absolutely right, Richard, and it's a point.
Yeah,
you're right. No, and it's a point that needs to be made more often and better. It's not just roll back the Bush tax cuts. It's roll back the Reagan tax cuts. That's really what we need to do. Judy in Mahwah, New Jersey. Hey, Judy, about a half a minute here before we've got to wrap up this hour.
Well, I just have to thank Fox News for their anti-war statement, because if Al-Qaeda really did set the fires, we should bring the troops home right away, because fighting them over there didn't keep them away from here, so we need to bring them back here right now.
Oh, what a great point.
You know,
that's you're absolutely right, Judy. Holy cow, Fox News has just given us the perfect rationale for bringing the troops home, because we've got to fight Al-Qaeda here in the form of their arson activities.
Right, send them right to California and let them get to work.
Yeah, what a great plan. Judy, thank you very much. It's all tongue-in-cheek, obviously, but tragically, I mean, you know, Fox News is presenting this stuff not tongue-in-cheek. They certainly should be, but who knows? Anyhow, coming up in the next hour, in our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, the Brotherhood of the Disappearing Pants, a field guide to conservative sex scandals. Plus the news of the day and your calls. 866-303-2270, our number, TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com, our websites. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Viagra for your brain. This is Air America Radio.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. You know, sometimes you know what you know. Sometimes you don't know what you don't know. Sometimes you don't know what you do know. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes even everything you know is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be that the conservatives have a disproportionate number of sex scandals? And if so, why? Joseph Minton Amon is with us. Is it Amon? Joseph? Joseph?
Yes.
Hey, welcome to the program. Am I pronouncing your last name?
It's Amon, actually, but thank you.
Amon, thank you.
Yes.
I'm sorry. It's Joseph Amon is with us. He is the author of The Brotherhood of the Disappearing Pants, a field guide to conservative sex scandals. And you open the book with section one, Republicanicus Libidinus.
Yeah.
Tell us about this Latin term and why focus on the sex scandals of the Reich?
Well, you know, when we started, our first book was Sweet Jesus, I Hate Bill O'Reilly. And we had done this O'Reilly book, and one of our favorite parts of it was the sex scandal. And it wasn't the fact that he was in a sex scandal per se and that we didn't like him. It was that it was the hypocrisy surrounding it. So as we were working on that book, and then we did a Fox News book called Fair and Balanced My Ass, and we started looking at kind of those sexual repression around the right. And the next chapter of this was logically to move to a sex scandal book, because we really felt more and more of them were kind of popping up in the news. And what we thought was funny about it was that over the last, you know, certainly since Karl Rove has been around, you know, they've really, conservatives in general have positioned themselves as the party of, you know, family values, of traditional America. So it was interesting to see these kind of really perverse sex scandals coming out in the media, and a lot that people don't even know about.
Yeah, typically I wouldn't go after people who are, you know, who, for example, didn't sign up for the military, whether it was Vietnam or whether it's Iraq, or who are claiming that, you know, family should stay together, or that, you know, whatever, you know, they're taking what they consider to be moral positions. But we have this bizarre non sequitur of the most gung-ho warmongers that I see on television almost every day. The bomb Iran crowd are the ones who have never seen war, and they've never seen somebody die on the field of battle, or probably never seen anybody die under horrific circumstances at all. They just seem not to have any sense of the consequences of their actions. And the people who, you know, the witch hunt against Bill Clinton, there's an entire chapter in your book, or entire section, about the guys who went after Bill Clinton for having sex with a consenting adult in the White House as president, had their own problems. And I really think that meme that you're talking about, it's the hypocrisy, stupid, is the important one, rather than, oh my God, they're having sex.
No, and a lot of what we do, and it's not just, we deal a lot with repression in the book, and you see when people lead these lives that are really repressed, and they're constantly talking about how they're the moral authorities, when they do act out on it, it is in the most bizarre and unhealthy ways. These are not guys who just, you know, cheated with their wives. We're talking about, you know, Galen Fox is one of my favorites. He was a Hawaiian legislator, Republican, who was flying back from Hawaii to D.C., sitting next to a woman. You know, she wakes up in the middle of the flight after being in a deep sleep, and this guy has his hand on the front of her jeans. You know, I mean, this is a man that's so repressed that he's actually sitting next to a sleeping woman, and he unzips her jeans and puts his hand on the front of it, and she wakes up with this warm sensation and realizes that the, you know, Hawaiian legislator sitting to her left is groping her, you know.
So the Republican from, oh my.
Yeah, and this is the kind of stuff that we really try to bring to light in the book, and the liberal media, so, you know, quote unquote, doesn't cover it at all. You know, I mean, you never hear about this stuff. And I would love to see the result of our book and these types of things end up that when someone says, oh, I vote Republican because of family values, that people would laugh at them for saying
yeah.
that.
Your website, conservativesexscandals.com, the book, The Brotherhood of the Disappearing Pants, A Field Guide to Conservative Sex Scandals. Is it true that Republicans are more likely to be involved in sex scandals than Democrats? I mean, they're roughly equal numbers of them I would guess, probably, you know, if we were to look at the snapshot of, say, the last 30, 40 years in state and federal legislatures.
It seems not only that there's more of them, but they're kind of more perverse. Again, you know, it's this kind of thing where you see the repression, these people acting out in really unhealthy ways. And
yeah, I see a bunch of, you know, familiar names here. I didn't realize that there were, you know, Mark Foley, obviously everybody knows about, Tip Hutchinson, Bob Packwood, and, you know, some of these. Dan Quayle's name in here on a sex scandal? What's the deal?
Yeah, and some of them, you know, we talk about a number of them that, you know, didn't kind of come to light, or that were, you know, if things were rumored, we definitely tell you in the book about which thing people have been convicted of, which things were rumors, where the evidence was, and let people kind of decide for themselves. Also, Neil Bush is another one, you know, George Bush's brother, that had I'm trying to remember if he was in Thailand.
No, he was in Hong Kong. He had hookers
sent
to his hotel room.
And had the prostitute just show up at his door.
Yeah, just what a surprise. Oh, by the way, come on in.
You know, so... And,
I'm shocked. Take your clothes off.
these things are developing daily. You know, we just had in the Vatican this Tommaso Stanico, who's who's a Monsignor, a high-level Monsignor at the Vatican, who was on a gay chat room inviting guys over to hook up at the Vatican.
Well, but he says he was doing it for research.
Yeah.
Probably just like the priest who is now an advisor to the Giuliani campaign, who's being charged with sexual abuse by a number of people, was just doing research.
Yeah, there's a lot of research going on in the Republican Party, often with hookers and minors. And
so what's the, do you recall off the top of your head what the deal is with Dan Quayle, or for that matter, Bob Dornan? I see, you know, some names in here I didn't realize that were ever, you know, touched by sex scandals.
Yeah, well, you know, we're kind of trying to keep a few of the, you know, we don't want to give away too many of the stories of the book. You know, the incentive
okay.
is to have people, some of the less well-known ones are kind of the most fun. So we're trying to keep some of these under wraps until people buy the book. But there's a definite, I would say you probably only heard about maybe a quarter of the sex scandals in the book.
Amazing. Okay, Joseph Ammon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Joseph Ammon, the author of The Brotherhood of the Disappearing Pants, a field guide to conservative sex scandals, the website conservativesexscandals.com. Thanks a lot for being with us today.
I appreciate it.
Good talking with you. Boy, there's a lot going on out there in the world right now. The State Department, the head of security for the State Department, Richard Griffin, has just resigned. Now, this might have something to do with Blackwater. This is going to be an interesting one to follow. Ricky Santorum, who is running around talking about Islamofascism, he now has his own newspaper column. And Bill O'Reilly, all worried. The Center for American Progress, by the way, reporting many of these things over at thinkprogress.org. Bill O'Reilly, all worried that J.K. Rowling is a provocateur for the gay agenda of indoctrination. He says, although those wizards, I'm very suspicious about what they're doing in their spare time. So I think this is my conclusion, is that J.K. Rowling is a provocateur, did it on purpose, and now is going to let all hell break loose. This J.K. Rowling, in answer to a question, saying, well, Dumbledore was gay, you know, the headmaster of the school. So it's, but the conservatives, oh, they're so upset. I mean, this is incredible. In the meantime, the Employee Non-Discrimination Act, this, frankly, I think is a big deal. The Employee Non-Discrimination Act, first of all, has been modified, shall we say, to provide exemptions against discrimination. How do you say it? To allow religious organizations to discriminate based on sex, on sexual orientation. And this first of all, in and of itself, would be pretty grim. You know, that the White House has been, has helped, according to WorldNet Daily, has helped write these exemptions into this piece of legislation. The ENDA, the Employee Non-Discrimination Act, making it illegal to discriminate against gays in the workplace, basically, gays, lesbians, transgendered. That. Saying, okay, you can't discriminate unless you happen to be one of the group that typically discriminates. But now on top of that, Bush is saying that in all probability he's going to veto this thing. This is a policy. ENDA simply reflects in federal law a policy that more than 90% of the Fortune 500 companies already have within their organizations. But the Bushies, they don't want this in, you know, as part of the rule of law. 16 minutes past 8.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Send it.
No, it's not. No, we're gonna go get that dream. We're gonna bring it back to America. The American dream is gonna come back. The ability to raise a family on one income and put your kids through school and have health care and have a pension for your old age. I mean, the American dream, the American middle class. We're going to bring it back, my friends. And part of that is teaching people how to communicate. That's my new book, Cracking the Code, and I'll be Friday night at the Elliott Bay Bookstore at 7:30 p.m. On Saturday, Sonoma State University Project Censored Award. I'll be there all day Saturday. And November 3rd, Albuquerque, New Mexico, at a book signing at Hastings Books and Music at 5 p.m. So drop by. You can find it all at our website, by the way, tomhartman.com. And there's a link to it from airamerica.com. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Justin in Evergreen, Colorado. Hey, Justin, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing? I know
just
everybody asks
up?
You that, and the truth
yeah.
is, you know. I wanted to talk to you about the concept of a comment. And there's an argument to be made that the fundamental function of government is to protect the commons. And then you think about what entails, what is the commons. And it comes by, protect the commons from exploitation by special interests. And right. you've talked about this, but I wanted to
this is Garrett Hardin's The Tragedy of the Commons. I mean, yeah, yes, and this is something, by the way, that the founders and framers well understood. It's the reason why Virginia and Pennsylvania and Massachusetts were referred to as the Commonwealth. It still are. It's the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the
exactly.
Commonwealth of it's the shared wealth. It's the shared community. It's the stuff that we all own together.
But the one thing that you haven't gone into is how when a if you take the old example of a village used to have a commons, you know, a green space that they'd put all their cows
yeah, like,
on.
Like the Boston Common, for example,
exactly.
was a shared pasture area.
And you say, okay, fields can only support 10 cows, say, in
right.
this case. And if the means to exploit the commons is everybody owns their cow individually, but some guy decides to put, and those 10 cows can produce 100 pounds of cheese. If one guy decides to put an extra cow on, then the amount of cheese actually drops to maybe 90 pounds. But that guy, he actually takes home, instead of 10 pounds per cow owner, he takes home 18 pounds. So there's a clear incentive for one person to exploit the commons, and even though everybody loses,
that's right. Everybody else loses. That's right. And that's one of the reasons why we...
Because
yeah, it's
now
one of the
only producing, you know, 90 pounds, but one
right.
guy is taking home twice as much.
Right. Yeah. That is the point at which you realize that in an economy, particularly, as you point out, an economy that depends in some part upon the commons, whether it's the commons, whether it's, you know, the air, the water, the, you know, whatever it may be.
Even things like common defense.
Absolutely. That at a certain point, it is close to a zero-sum game. That is to say that the more the winners get, the more everybody else loses. And we certainly have seen that over the last 26 years, as we have seen the average income of working people in the United States, average wages, the median income in the United States, has been at $34,000 a year, pretty much, or maybe it's 43. I'd have to go back. Sometimes I mix these numbers up, but it's one or the other. Pretty much since Reagan came into office until today, it pretty much hasn't changed. It arguably has declined a little bit when you consider purchasing power. But the CEO income has gone up massively.
And productivity. So where's all that productivity increase going to? It's going to
well, that's an interesting one, because there's two explanations for that. One is that the American worker is more productive. There's also a more subtle one, and that is that productivity is measured as the output of a company. And if that company has taken their back office functions, for example, you know, the bookkeeping, and they've offshored it to India via telephone wires, they're able to lay off four or five employees and get that done at the cost of basically one employee. And so it seems that the company is more productive, when in fact, and arguably they are, if you're defining productivity as output versus, you know, cost to produce the output, the company is more productive. And it looks like the American workers at that company are more productive, when in fact it's not a matter of their becoming more productive. It's a matter of the company bringing in cheap labor from India through the back door, so to speak, through the Internet. And I suspect that a lot of the increase in productivity that we've seen in the United States in the last 30 years, particularly since Jack Welch, as head of GE, you know, opened up India for back offices, and a lot of companies here started moving secondary and tertiary functions off to China in manufacturing, that a lot of that productivity increase is actually the insource, the in this country version of outsourcing.
One other thing that you should that should be noted is that when you move the tax burden from corporations to individuals, then you are essentially moving the tax burden to the lower class. Because
right, and yeah, exactly. You know, we the people are paying more, but plus you're reducing the incentive to buy. You're reducing demand, and thus you're hurting the economy. I mean, it's just the bottom line as you do that. Justin, thank you very much for the call. We're up against the clock here. 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
All right, Republicans, line up for duty. Where are you going? Hey! Kicking off. Kicking off. Chicken hawks, chicken hawks. Karl Rove, he didn't serve. Dick Cheney, he didn't serve. Tom DeLay, he didn't serve. And George Bush was AWOL. Chicken hawks.
Oh, but they want to drop a bomb. I'll tell you, back in January, this is pretty amazing when you think about it. Back in January of this year, way back then, there was an article in there were several articles, but one in the military news services, one in the Russian news services, quoting retired Lieutenant General McKerny, chairman of the Iran Policy Committee, and former Assistant Vice Chief of Staff of the Air Force. As point, now keep in mind, this was in January. As pointing out that we have a 14-ton super bomb that he said, this is a quote from McKerny, the U.S. has a new massive ordnance penetrator that's 30,000 pounds. That really penetrates. Ahmadinejad has nothing in Iran that we can't penetrate. Says back in January that the world press, particularly the Russian press, was paying attention to this because they said that this was more destructive than the vacuum bomb that Russia had tested back at the end of last year. The so-called super bunker busting bomb. And now George Bush is asking, and the Republicans in the House and Senate and Dick Cheney, they're asking for $196.4 billion, the supplemental war spending, buried inside this thing. And people are starting to read this. Buried inside this thing is a request for $88 billion. This is a report by CQ. A report, $88 million to modify B-2 bombers, the stealth bombers, so that they're capable of carrying these, what are called MOPs, M-O-P, Massive Ordnance Penetrators. A House summary accompanying the supplemental spending proposal said the request for money to modify B-2s to carry the bombs came in response to, quote, an urgent operational need from theater commanders, end quote. Previous statements by the Defense Department and the program's contractors, along with interviews with military experts, suggest the weapon is meant for the kind of hardened targets found chiefly in Iran. So they told us in January it was going to come, and here it is. It's in the budget. Amazing. Dave in Redondo Beach, California. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
On this issue of the cost of the war versus the cost of, for example, fighting the fires in Southern California, Canada Air up in Canada makes an amphibian water bomber to bomb fires. It's called the CL-415. Mm-hmm. They're about $30 million each. You could buy six of those and fund the maintenance, insurance, and crews for 5 years, six aircraft for 5 years, for about $96 million. Excuse me, that's for three aircraft. $192 million for six aircraft, for six water bombers. And you could station them so they could help all of the southeastern part of the United States, Nevada, Arizona.
$192 million is about, what, 5-6 hours in Iraq?
That's 1 day in Iraq.
1 day.
We're spending
hours,
about $195 million per day in Iraq. So for the cost of six water bombers and 5 years of support, 1 day in Iraq. Where are your priorities?
Yeah. Amen. Well said. Thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate the call. Sandy in Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, Sandy. You are on the air, Sandy. Sandy is not there. Scott in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hello, Tom. How are you today?
I am fine.
I just wanted to mention the fact that going back to the middle class, and I'm a stay-at-home dad, and my wife is a teacher at a high school, and I think a lot of Americans really need to cut back on their expenditures in order to really bring themselves in line. And I think, like my wife and I, we don't carry a cell phone. We don't carry cable TV. We have one car. She rides her bike to work during the day. I do wait tables in the evening three nights a week. But I think a lot of Americans really have overextended themselves, and you mentioned this quite a bit, to the point where they're so far in debt that they can't manage it.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. Simplicity, and particularly voluntary simplicity, is a high value, and we need to bring it back as a high value. I mean, it was a high value among the generation of our grandparents, the people who lived through the Great Depression.
You know, I have everything I need, and everything I need is enough.
Yeah, there you go. Well said, Scott. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate it. And it's there's no shortage of good books on the topic, by the way, about, you know, just Google voluntary simplicity or look around for it. But it's, yeah, well said. Frank in Los Angeles. Hey, Frank.
How you doing? You know, this last caller, why don't we reverse the tax breaks to the rich and give them to the poor? And then we would have a higher standard of living, and we could do all the things he says, you know. But
well, that's how it used to be. I mean, it wasn't so much that you gave tax breaks to the poor, or even that you gave tax money to the poor, but that government worked in such a fashion that the people at the very top helped fund the commons proportionate to their usage of the commons, because
yeah,
the commons actually facilitated their getting
taxes.
Rich.
They're getting the most benefit, and just like in California, I'm just diverting for a minute. In California, Preparation 13. The commercial property owners were paying 70% of all the taxes collected in California. When that went into effect, it reversed it, and now 70% of the taxes are collected from homeowners, and 30% or 25% it's 25% is collected from the commercial property owners. So I mean,
that's the same thing. It's the same thing we've seen as a national trend
that was sponsored by the realtors.
Right.
And but anyway, it's calling that the deliberate ploy to eliminate the middle class started with Ronald Reagan when he resurrected Calvin Coolidge's trickle-down economics. And why would you resurrect a failing policy that trickle-down caused the depression that Hoover got blamed for?
But he resurrected it because it didn't fail, Frank.
Why would you resurrect a failing policy? And
Frank, it didn't fail.
Your motive.
Frank, it didn't fail.
So
the reason that Ronald Reagan resurrected trickle-down economics was because he wanted to create a nation of peons. He wanted to disempower the middle class. The conservatives have been quite open about this. I mean, go back and read Russell Kirk's 1953 book, The Conservative Mind, which is the Bible of the modern conservative movement. You need to have order and society. You need to have a stable society. You can't have a stable society if you've got a strong middle class, because they will start getting politically active. They'll start speaking out. They'll start showing up at protests. They will start agitating. And God forbid that we have people involved in democracy in the United States.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, in Costa Rica, they raised the price of the staple foods, you know, like rice and milk and whatever, they have a revolution over there. And
that's right.
Want that
and
in this country.
Well, the same thing in France.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you've got a strong and vital democracy there because you still have a strong and vital middle class. And Reagan looked at the middle class in the United States and said, okay, this is the second time in the history of this country we've had a strong middle class. The first time was in 1770. And that middle class stood up against England and said, no, thank you, and did the American Revolution. And then in the 1970s, the second great 40-year period of an American middle class, the middle class was standing up and saying, hey, wait a minute, we want women's rights, we want gay rights, we want African Americans, you know, rights, we want... an end of this war. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to take it anymore from these giant corporations. And he said, we can't have this. We got to do away with free college education in the state of California. We've got to do away with the middle class and turn them into the working poor, because the working poor are more easy to manipulate. And when people are terrified, economically terrified, it's much more easy to control them. And the entire arc of history demonstrates that it's all about economics as a tool of power. Frank, thanks very much. You said it very well. I appreciate the call. Pam in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Pam.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can.
I thank you very much for taking my call. I have great respect for you and love listening to your program. But I'd like to make a comment about what you said last week when you were talking about presidential candidates and talking about Edwards versus Kucinich.
Mm-hmm.
Can you
sure,
remember?
Go ahead.
I
don't remember specifically what I said, I can probably repeat it, which was probably something to the effect of, on the issues, I'm probably closer to Dennis Kucinich than any other candidate, and I think that John Edwards is the only candidate that I've contributed money to.
Yes, and I thought that was wonderful because I feel exactly the same way, and when I listened to that, I was so pleased. But I'd like to just suggest one more step. I also, even though I'm retired, I'm on a fixed income, I still do send money to support John Edwards, but I also send money to Kucinich because I think it's so important that his voice be out there.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And
I
this
agree,
is
Pam.
The one chance we have to get the media to look at this candidate, and what they're interested in is how many people are supporting him and how many people send money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the more support he gets to keep his voice in the fight, even though he is disrespected endlessly and discounted, mm-hmm. he still stays in there. And keeps
no, and it's really important that he does. I mean, he moved Howard Dean. In the 4 years ago, Howard Dean learned a lot, I think, from being in the debates with Dennis Kucinich. I think that John Edwards and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the other so-called front leaders are all learning from being in the debate with Dennis Kucinich. And I think you're right. And I'll go make a contribution to him this afternoon. You sold me, Pam. Thank you very much. 45 minutes past the hour. Louise is shaking her head. No, I really will. It's, you know, not a lot. But, I mean, you know, say yes. I'm there with you, Dennis. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Acid rain is not a problem, said a businessman. But all the fish are belly up and floating round. And there's nothing growing from the ground. Just ask Farmer Brown. On the corner are some activists with picket signs. They want the factories to stop their filthy ways. But the government says it's okay. It'll go away any day. Acid rain is up my nose. Poison fish, polluted skies. It makes my flowers die. Acid rain will fade your
acid heart. Rain is up my nose and in my eyes. Welcome back. Ellen Ratner's on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. TalkRadioNews.com, the website. Ellen, I see that the buried in this Bush $196.4 billion supplemental is a request for $88 million to modify our B-2 stealth bombers so they can drop these massive ordnance penetrator bombs that we're not even supposed to have, that we don't even officially have, but apparently we do.
Well, apparently we do, although I was going to use that lovely song of yours to segue into the White House response to Dr. Julie Gerberding. She's head of the Centers for Disease Control's testimony on climate change. She talked about it yesterday, but it looks like her spokesperson said she was able to say everything she wanted to say, but somebody dropped to the Associated Press what her testimony was actually going to be before it was heavily edited by the Office of Management and the Budget. And,
right, it went from like 14 pages down to 4 or something like that?
Well, right, and of course, her spokesperson said it wasn't watered down in terms of concerns that climate change raises on public health, but the AP's document that they got said that there were 6 pages of detail about specific health problems that might become more prevalent as a result of global warming.
Yeah, and speaking of global warming, the lead up at the top of the New York Times website today, California wildfires have burned 666 square miles. There's your number, George Bush.
Yeah, he's a big 666 guy.
Yeah.
For sure. And, of course, he's going to go out there tomorrow. He had a closed video, sort of a video conference on that today.
Just like with Katrina.
I'm sorry?
Just like with Katrina.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And they're all saying, well, he's right on it at this point. Yeah, right, okay. Secretary Rice was before the House Foreign Affairs Committee. She apparently is also going to testify before the Senate, I believe, on Thursday. I guess that's tomorrow. Nope, that's that's tomorrow, right? Today's Wednesday.
Yeah.
And she it basically said that that their vision of the Middle East are countries that are going to trade more, invest more, and talk more about problems. And she essentially went all over the Iranian government. She said they're pursuing policies which are detrimental to the long-term interests of its neighbors. So she was just clanging and clanging and clanging that Iran issue again. Also,
you know, it's interesting. There was one of the op-eds, I believe it was Tom Friedman today in the New York Times, was talking about how really nobody's talking about Iraq in Washington, D.C. anymore. You know, even ending the war doesn't seem to be the big hysteria, the big concern. Instead, it's should we or should we not bomb Iran? I mean, these guys, their meme is actually getting out there.
Well, yeah. I mean, they are getting out there big time, and it's
there's a major sales push going on.
It's disturbing. Also, speaking of disturbing, the Senate this morning approved Leslie Southwick for the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, 59-38. 10 Republicans voted, 10 Democrats voted with the Republicans. He had the ACLU was not a very happy camper, nor was the NAACP with this. Apparently, a co-worker had called somebody a good old N, was fired for it, and he reinstated the co-worker of this particular person. The AC, he also, in an AFL-CIO firing, essentially allowed the firing without cause and called it a way to balance things.
Yeah, this guy is just a hardcore right-winger. Ted Kennedy actually sent out a news release. I got it about an hour or two ago. Condemning the senators who had voted for this person. Why did these 10 Democrats go along?
Well, I'll go through the list. Boxer, Dodd, and I believe Kerry did not vote. I think they were not there, but that would not have affected it because they pretty much got, well, it made it because they were 59-38. But they got Nelson, Pryor, Akaka, Byrd, Conrad, Dorgan, Feinstein, Johnson of South Dakota, and Lincoln, and of course Lieberman.
Surprised by almost all of those except Lieberman. I don't get it.
I don't get it either, and I don't get to Feinstein.
Yeah, Feinstein. That's we'll have to find out what the deal is here. Hopefully one of them will speak. What else is going on?
Okay. Well, it's interesting. Today the United Nations also had a briefing by video conference from the UN Special Envoy from Darfur, Jan Ellison. And essentially he said things are getting worse. There's supposed to be a peace conference that's going to be taking Libya is actually hosting it starting on the 26th. But what he's saying is that, first of all, they're trying to get this group called the civil society to even get visas to get out of there to attend the meeting and trying to get the government to do that. But also they're saying that things are getting very, very scary in some of the camps. People have been there for 4.5 years. He has now been working for almost 9 months, Tom, to try and get people to come to this peace conference.
Yeah, incredible. Well, and hopefully it won't get worse. And you and I will be there in March. We'll report back on it. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Always good talking with you. Coming up Thursday, Greg Conco and I are going to be debating the food industry's ability to police itself. Ed Rampell, the editor of Hustler magazine, is here about the 60th anniversary of the Hollywood 10 and the Blacklist. Christy Harvey from the Center for American Progress and your calls. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.